Hello, this month we look at 1940, where the Chinese triads provoke Japan towards war in Asia, and my Polish grandmother escapes from Warsaw to apparent safety in France. In the second half of the show, Noreen and I will see the tails wagging the dog in the Korean Peninsula, as Syngman Rhee and Kim Il-sung heat up the Cold War.
We welcome to the studio our author and historian, Paul Letters, who does This Month in History.
Thanks, Noreen. How are you doing?
Yes, very good. So what are we talking about today?
World War II in Europe in 1940. There was one fascist leader who handed the English language an appropriate new word. In April 1940, German forces attacked Norway. That came to an end 75 years ago, June 10th, when Norway surrendered to Germany. But early on in that invasion, the Norwegian fascist party leader, Vidkun Quisling, he got Norwegian fascist forces going, and they acted as a fifth column for the German invaders, occupying military bases in Norway and generally kind of helping out. In fact, he'd set the fascist party up in 1934, imitating Hitler and the Nazi party. And then earlier in 1940, Quisling travelled to Berlin to meet Nazi leaders and plan the invasion of his own country. Later on, after the Germans defeat the Norwegian army, Quisling will become a leader of a puppet fascist government in Oslo as well. And of course, we get that from his name, the word Quisling, meaning traitor,
yeah,
in English and four or five other European languages at least, including Finnish, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, there you go. You've learned lots of Finnish.
I know. Wow.
And also on this day in 1940, June 10th, Benito Mussolini's Italy declared war on France and Britain. And this came after months of Italy holding off, not getting involved in the war in Europe, staying neutral in the battle between Germany and the Allies. So the question, you know, why now? Why June 1940? What caused Mussolini's change of heart? Well, probably his ego. That's probably the main kind of stream opinion on that. Italy's less than all-powerful military had encouraged him to stay out of the war until now. But as France was on its knees, virtually defeated, and, you know, the thought of fascist Germany single-handedly conquering Europe was perhaps too much for his ego to take. This is the man who started fascism. You know, he'd been in power 10 years before Hitler, so he wanted in on the action.
So who are his allies then?
For Italy,
yeah.
Well, he is allied with Germany, but until this point, Italy has stayed neutral in the war.
Yeah.
So it's obviously there's a contradiction there, which you think is going to give at some point, and this is when it does. But Hitler was asking Mussolini to join in September 1939 and to be ready to go soon after Hitler's invasion of Poland. But Mussolini was prevaricating, and even when they did join in June 1940, the Italian troops were easily held back by the French forces in the Alps, so they were not really helping Germany at all. So they were allies, but not necessarily helping them.
Helpful, yeah.
And there was a response to Italy's declaration of war. If you were happened to be Italian living in Britain, for example, if you were aged between 16 and 70, and if you'd been living in Britain less than 20 years, you were immediately interned from June the 10th, 1940. And that whole internship, of course, you know, these are people who've chosen to live in Britain and have been loyal to the country, but that's not going to make any difference. That happens, of course, all over the world. During World War II, America took another big step closer to officially giving up its neutrality because of this Italian declaration of war. In fact, some historians would say the biggest step, kind of before Pearl Harbor. President Roosevelt made his most belligerent speech so far on a radio broadcast, promising his support for Britain and France and promising all the material that America could give them. And so again, they're neutral, but they're not really neutral at this point during World War II. They're clearly taking a side, but their armed forces aren't actually fighting for America in the war until Pearl Harbor's attacked.
Wow. I'm learning so much. I feel smart already. I'm just trying to retain all this knowledge, so in case I go to a party or something, I'll, you know, in the month of June.
You must go to some fun parties.
Yeah. And then, what happened on June 14th then?
Yeah, that's when German tanks enter Paris, and Paris is declared a few days before that, actually, again, June 10th, Paris is declared an open city, meaning they're not going to put up a fight,
mm-hmm.
which is why Paris is so, one of the reasons why Paris is so beautiful today. And so, yeah, the Germans came in a few days later on June 14th. My grandmother was there, my Polish grandmother. She left Poland after Poland was invaded in September or October. Early October, she left Poland and made her way to France across neutral nations, Romania, Italy when it was still neutral, Yugoslavia in between those two as well. Of course, Germany wasn't fighting against France until May 1940, so she kind of settled there for a few months. But now she realised she had to get out of Paris and then eventually out of France and to England. And my main character in my novel, A Chance Kill, is based on that story. So, yeah, so Germany's taking over Paris and France will fight on for another 2 weeks in other parts of France, but eventually surrender on the 24th of June 1940.
And then later on, we'll return to World War II and its effects on Asia. Just very quickly, on the Facebook page, we're asking it, actually on the radio as well, we're asking you, which came first, Donald Duck or Alcoholics Anonymous, both of which are our inventions of the month, June.
That's right, yeah, and both celebrating birthdays either yesterday or today, or anniversaries. We were talking about the defeat of France in Europe in June 1940, and also the Netherlands was defeated in May 1940. And the defeat of those two countries had a huge effect on Asia at this time, 75 years ago. Japan had been expanding in China since 1937, if not before, and they were struggling, you know, with that fight. Yet they, in the summer of 1940, Japan were looking to take on additional enemies in the region. So, obvious question, you know, why? And with hindsight, the history books tend to call this period the road to Pearl Harbor, as if this is all just building up inevitably to that event. But it wasn't all about the US in the summer of 1940 from Japan's perspective. So, of course, the fall of France and the Netherlands and their empires in Asia presented new opportunities for Japan. Mm-hmm. And we'll say more about that in a while. But interestingly, also Chinese expats played an important role.
I've never heard of that. Chinese expats. I've heard of Chinese migrant workers.
Well, why can we only call British or Americans expats?
But absolutely, anyway. Yeah, I agree.
All over Southeast Asia, there were sizable Chinese communities, not just in Malaya, as it was then called, but also in the Philippines, Thailand, French Indochina, that's obviously Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, and in the Dutch East Indies, Indonesia today. Inside each of these neutral countries, neutral as they were in June 1940, there were Chinese chambers of commerce who often were linked to the triads, and they persuaded the chambers of commerce persuaded their members to boycott Japanese goods.
Threatened.
Yeah, because obviously Japan had invaded China, and any uncooperative Chinese would maybe receive a smear of dung across their doors, for starters, and if they didn't get the hint, they'd have their ears sliced off. So, yeah, unsurprisingly, larger numbers of Chinese across Southeast Asia boycotted Japanese goods, which had a serious impact on Japanese manufacturing exports to Southeast Asia. In fact, it halved them compared to pre-1937 levels. And, of course, the Chinese communities then bought more American goods, substituted American goods for Japanese goods, which gained some favour, perhaps, with America, but of course, provoked the Japanese. So this is all kind of adding to the picture for Japan of feeling kind of isolated and cornered. You know, you've got those European empires, Britain's as well, very chummy with each other and with America, and not trading with Japan. So Japan wanting to economically kind of break out and get new raw materials and new markets.
One of the many reasons why they probably want to attack America all the more.
Yeah, America was increasingly it kind of in their way from the Japanese government's perspective, and the fall of the Dutch and French empires, obviously French Indochina and the Dutch East Indies. Japan just didn't want America to fill that gap. America easily could have stepped in to protect those European empires, and Japan obviously didn't want that to happen. America was far more concerned with Southeast Asia than it was with China, which had been invaded for years by this point, and America hadn't done a lot to help China.
Good point. They help with Vietnam, they help with Korea. Why not with China?
They're most concerned about the Dutch East Indies because they got 90% of their rubber and tin imports from there. And, of course, Indonesia was rich in oil. So China at this point was still seen as the sick man of Asia, and there wasn't much to gain out of it. It's just, you know, nations tended to take these, obviously, you know, looks out for their own interests. And that's perhaps the way America and other nations looked at China. Of course, they did seize treaty ports, as they called them, and forced their own terms of trade on the region. But beyond that...
And look how the tables have turned. How much bad debt China's buying off America.
Yeah, it was a real, you know, at that time, they can't possibly have foreseen that what was going to happen with China. Otherwise, they might have invested in various ways in it a bit more positively. Roosevelt and his government were debating their options about what to do with it, about these declining European empires, because they'd been defeated in Europe, France and the Netherlands. And they looked at sending a naval fleet into Southeast Asia, but they decided that would be too provocative against the Japanese. So again, the America that we've got in this period is generally not looking for war. It's, again, we don't want to look at history backwards and look at American intervention since 1941. But at this time, they'd had decades and decades of isolationism, and they didn't want to get involved in the First World War, and obviously didn't until 1917, just a year before it was over. So they're not looking too urgently. But having said that, I think Roosevelt is increasingly coming around to the inevitable. But they settle at this point in the summer of 1940 to transfer the bulk of the U.S. Navy from its base in California to Hawaii, to Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. So that's how it ends up being such a big target for the Japanese come the following year. But of course, Japan wants to fill the vacuum in Southeast Asia that the Europeans were leaving behind. So on June the 18th, 1940, Japanese officials march up the steps of Government House in Hanoi and demand the right to station Japanese military observers at the border between Vietnam or French Indochina and China.
Because France had left. So.
France was leaving, going out the door at this point. Within a few days of this, the authority leading France would be Vichy France, fascist France, and they obviously take fascist Germany's side and who are allied with Japan. So yeah, soon the door is going to be flung open for the Imperial Japanese Army. But in June 1940, they'd send 6,000 military observers, 6,000 troops into Indochina. And this is the beginning of that process of Japan taking a hold of Southeast Asia.
I've often wondered, I've not actually seen a lot of things to do with Japanese-Germany relations.
Yeah, it was a kind of an alliance of convenience. Since 1936, they had been allied together, but it was very much dividing up the world, and it was... One, from Hitler's point of view, maybe one less thing to worry about, the European empires in Asia. He could leave that to the Japanese.
Yeah. Okay.
But beyond that, they didn't work closely together, I'd say.
Wow. I'm enlightened. I did want to ask one more thing. How come when France surrendered to Germany, then how come then the remaining land in Asia would go to Japan as opposed to Germany?
The number of troops, and it would take a very busy Germany to, you know, to do that, to take over these countries in Asia, and logistically to get out there with naval and air support. The Germans in June 1940 were concerned about having to occupy France, so that's why they let half of France rule itself under this Vichy regime, this fascist regime, and then the Vichy regime was de facto the rulers of French Indochina. So at this point, it's still like that. Japan doesn't kind of quite walk in yet. It's September 1940 before Japan takes over Indochina as a whole, which is, again, complicated in terms of relations, because if fascist France is allied with fascist Germany, who's allied with Imperial Japan, then, you know, how does that work? Japan invading fascist France, France's colonies.
But yeah.
It was convenient for those reasons I said earlier for Hitler, so he let them get away with that. And what's he going to do, turn around and start fighting Japan as well? Well, 65 years ago this month, June 25th, 1950, North Korea invaded the South, obviously starting the Korean War. Sort of asking kind of why did it start and what made the North think they would kind of get away with that. I hope that's not too one-sided, but I think we can say, you know, the North did invade invade the South, and let's have a look at why. In the summer of 1945, at the end of World War II, or towards the end, the peninsula, the Korean Peninsula, was occupied by the world's two superpowers, as they've by now become, almost by accident. Japan collapsed, and they'd held Korea since 1910, and the Soviet army pushed into northern Korea. American troops were in the area, in the region, because their original mission was to invade mainland Japan. But of course, the atomic bombs were going to be dropped to negate the need for the American troops to do that. And so they found themselves in South Korea. And Moscow and Washington then agree that the 38th parallel, which splits the peninsula in half, of course, that will serve as the demarcation line. But then they just had a vague idea of then in the future creating a single Korean government and withdrawing all occupation forces. And the forces did withdraw, the Americans and the Soviets, by 1949, but there was no agreement as to what would happen next. So the South held elections. The South's obviously supported by America, held an election that was sanctioned by the United Nations, but the North didn't hold an election. Civil war breaks out. Each side threatens to invade the other. And both sides, North and South, are calling upon their superpower sponsors, if you like, to get involved. And for a long time, that didn't happen. The South Korean President Syngman Rhee repeatedly asked for US military support that he didn't receive. And in fact, one of the reasons the Americans withdrew their troops from South Korea was their fear that Syngman Rhee, who the Americans regarded as a liability, with good reason, I'd say, that Syngman Rhee might just attack the North and drag America into a war it didn't want. So that's what kind of why they held off, at least for a while. And in the North, similarly, Kim Il-sung repeatedly sought support from the USSR to invade the South, and Stalin repeatedly turned this down until 1950. So this is obviously when things change, sort of the last few months of 1949, Stalin's thinking begins to change. And going into 1950, Stalin saw the Americans had done nothing to stop the communists coming to power in China a few months earlier, October 49, of course. And then in January 1950, Secretary of State Dean Acheson announced publicly that the American defensive perimeter that they were building in East Asia did not include South Korea. So Stalin's taking that as a green light. He's also got well-placed British spies who had access to top-secret US government documents, which kind of backed up this opinion of Stalin that there's no way America's going to get involved. And, of course, then Stalin encourages Kim Il-sung to go for it. Stalin's pretty careful himself at all stages to, you know, not get caught with his kind of sticky fingers involved too much, at least in terms of being to blame for starting it. Kim turns back to Stalin and assures him, to quote Kim Il-sung, that the attack will be swift and the war will be won in 3 days.
Wow.
Yes. Of course, the war that's still not officially been concluded today.
Still not over.
But you know, Stalin is, you know, he's a master at kind of pulling the strings in the background without getting too involved until he sees it as kind of safe to do so. He's also encouraging at this point Ho Chi Minh in Vietnam to intensify the Viet Minh offensive against the French, who are still clinging on to Indochina. This is in the early 1950s, of course, until the French are kicked out in 1954.
And Indochina is Vietnam,
no, Cambodia, Laos. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so in East Asia, Stalin's hoping to get to maintain this sort of momentum of communism, with China becoming, you know, the second country in the world to become communist in 1949. Then you've got things happening in North Korea, things potentially happening in Vietnam. And he likes this strategy because it didn't require direct involvement by the Soviets. And although we see Stalin as obviously a confrontational character who had a thirst for killing his own people, he didn't. When you look at it, he didn't really like military confrontations with major powers. Perhaps he was so keen to cling on to his own power, and he didn't want to risk a possible military defeat that would force him out of power. You know, he'd signed peace pacts with both Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan.
Japan, yeah.
Yeah, during World War II.
So on paper, he looked like the good guy, but behind the scenes, he was sort of pulling all the...
Yeah, it's maybe wasn't so kind to his own people, but he was in many ways. I wouldn't say he wasn't belligerent, because he would invade a smaller country, Poland, Latvia, Lithuania, etc., Estonia, without thinking about it. But he was just really taking care with his own power, I guess. So, yeah, by June 1940, he considered America wouldn't get involved, so he gave Kim Il-sung this encouragement to go ahead. And obviously Stalin didn't expect the reaction that he'd get from America when on 25th of June 1950 the North Koreans go invade the South. And of course they're crossing a boundary which is sanctioned by the United Nations, that 38th parallel. The UN's only been around for 5 years by this point. It's a big test for them. And after the appeasement era of the 1930s, the UN didn't want to seem to fail the way the League of Nations failed to stop World War II. And Stalin, this is where he's maybe not so clever. He's missed the ball on the fact that, first of all, the US has conveniently got a huge army located nearby occupying Japan, and also Stalin had removed his own representative from the UN Security Council.
So there was no one from Russia, USSR, on the UN board council.
Exactly, and they could have vetoed this. The Korean War becomes a United Nations war, and the USSR could have vetoed that war, but they pulled out in protest at China, communist China, not being admitted by the UN. So they were pulled out in protest of that and failed to stop the UN action, the UN approval of America and 20 allies sending troops to Korea to obviously fight against the North. And that all started 25th of June 1950.
And the war, it's still a war, but not in terms of military. There is still...
The situation's not resolved. In 1945, the peninsula was divided, and it's still divided.
So much for the war will be won in 3 days.
Yes, exactly.
We've got 1 minute before the program ends, Paul.
So we asked you what came first, Donald Duck or Alcoholics Anonymous?
I think Donald Duck came first.
Donald Duck is 81 years old yesterday. 1934, he made his first film appearance in a short cartoon by Walt Disney, of course. And Alcoholics Anonymous is 80 years old today, founded in New York on the 10th of June, 1935.
Oh, wow. So very close together.
Very close.
I just thought alcoholism was more accepted back in the day.
Well, I guess it's been around for a long time, and the organization's grown hugely. They've got 80,000 local groups just in the United States today.
Wow. Paul, once again, thank you so much for being here this month, and see you again next month.
Thank you.